Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I'm your host, Neil Horwitz. Follow me on Twitter at NJH287 and get more information on the podcast, as always, at the homepage at dsmsports.net. Really psyched for today's show. Got some great topics that I'm going to touch on. When I talk to Dan Pala, the manager of social media marketing with NBC Sports and Olympics. A lot of cool things to talk about with Dan and some fun stories as well with all the stuff that NBC Sports Olympics have going on the social media side. But before we get to our conversation with Dan Pala, we of course have this episode's helpful tool. And this episode's helpful tool comes from Jessica Smith on Twitter. Recommend it. She's a great follow and always has some great recommendations. And it's called PicDeck. For anyone that loves TweetDeck like myself and loves their columns of with live streams of tweets and searches and hashtags, whatever you want to be tracking and columns coming at you in a live stream, then PicDeck is for you. It is like TweetDeck but for Instagram. It is a web-based tool, so you go to picdeck.co. It's 100% free. Sign in with your Instagram profile, and then boom, you have a live feed of your Instagram photos. You're also able to add columns that can track anything from Instagram searches to individual users, as well as any hashtags that you want to be tracking Instagram photos for. Within the column, you can see how many likes a photo is getting, and then instantly click and open that Instagram photo in a separate Instagram link to follow up and like it yourself, or look at the comments and respond in kind, or to just capture what's going on. The one thing with PicDeck's columns is it won't tell you how many comments something is getting, but if you see something has a lot of likes or is getting a lot of engagement, you can always click out and check the comments yourself in the external link. So it's not a ton that you can do from a versatility perspective, but it's pretty much everything you can do from TweetDeck you can do with PicDeck for Instagram, and it's 100% free, which is even better. Though it is web-based, for now there's no desktop version like there is for TweetDeck. But check it out. I think you'll like it. It's a great way just to keep on top of Instagram without having to go to your phone or go to Icona Square at all times. It's a live dynamic feed showing you the best and the latest and greatest coming through Instagram and what you should be paying attention to, and helps you track any hashtags or other users along the way. So check it out. I think you'll like it. It's picdeck.co, PicDeck, and that's this episode's helpful tool. All right, we'll be right back to have a conversation with Dan Pala, the manager of social media marketing for NBC Sports and Olympics. All right, welcome back. That was this episode's helpful tool. It's kind of like TweetDeck, but for Instagram. It's a really nice little handy tool where instead of having to scroll over the place on an Icona Square or the endless scrolling on your Instagram app, you can get a stream of Instagram photos, whether it's for the hashtag or your own home following profile. Are you familiar with PicDeck at all? Are you guys jumping to Instagram a lot there? We're talking to our guest, Dan Pala of NBC Sports.
Hey, how's it going, Neil? No, can't say that I use PicDeck a whole lot, but certainly familiar with a lot of the Instagram tools that are out there.
Getting better every day, and of course they're all over the place right now, touting their 300 million number, a little bit higher than Twitter. So we'll see what happens with Instagram from here on out. But definitely a good tool. But let me formally welcome you to the podcast. We're delighted to have you on the podcast today. We're talking to Dan Pala, the manager of social media marketing with NBC Sports and Olympics. Welcome to the podcast, Dan.
Thanks so much for having me, man. It's my first podcast, so I'm excited, nervous, all the things that you can be.
Well, we should have a great conversation ahead. Lots to talk about. NBC Sports has their hand in a lot of cool things, and you guys do a great job there. So we'll have a great discussion coming up right now. But first, we'd like to get to know all of our guests. You are living the dream. You have a really fun job, but you worked your butt off to get to where you are. So give our listeners an idea of your career path, how you got into pro sports, getting experience early on, and tips along the way.
Yeah, I think for me, it's kind of a fun, interesting path to get to be into the social media team for NBC Sports and Olympics. It's really great, but yeah, definitely when I started overall, social media didn't exist in a professional level in any means. So, I really came up with a production background I interned for a few sports documentaries in some of my free time in college. That sort of turned into a job for me at ESPN in a brand new startup show that was created for Stephen A. Smith called Quite Frankly with Stephen A. Smith. He was my first boss coming out of college, and
Oh, that's the
that
first
was.
boss, huh?
Yeah, exactly. But I'll tell you, we had a great time, and it was a huge learning experience, and it was great to start on a brand new startup show because it really required all hands on deck and for everyone to take in as much as they absolutely could. So there was a lot of great experiences and a lot of things I'm sure that I wasn't supposed to be able to have my hands on that early, and with some guidance and some really good people that helped me out on that show.
Dan, just
It,
before we get too far ahead, tell us where you went to school, what you studied there, and what kind of internships you did, and how you really made that ESPN contact.
Yeah, well, I mean, it definitely wasn't, I didn't seek out sports in some way, or it was an interest for sure. I went to Hofstra University out in Long Island, and I double majored in film and television production, and those were sort of my interests. I knew, when I was younger, my parents had sort of pushed me towards it because it was, I wasn't necessarily always interested in doing my English homework, but I was happy to spend about, 7 to 8 hours in an edit room to do like a school project. So they saw the passion was there, and they sort of really, pushed me to follow that and work hard and do that. So I did, and Hofstra's in Long Island. It was sort of a train ride into the city. It wasn't too long, so I interned at what used to be called Black Canyon Productions, who had some great guys who created a lot of great sports documentaries, like When It Was a Game or Hitler's Pawn, or some of those great ones that were picked up by HBO and other people. So it really got me great exposure to sort of sports television and sports media, and some of the documentary and storytelling that I really enjoyed and loved. So the connections that they had and sort of the doors they helped me open led me to ESPN. So it was certainly, like I said, it was, I just always enjoyed sports and I always enjoyed television, and it interested me. So I naturally worked a lot harder. Because it didn't feel like as much of work as so many other things did. So for me, as much and as hard of as hardworking as I feel like you have to be to really stay in this business and always learn and be looking for opportunity, I was lucky enough that it didn't always feel like a job.
Oh, very cool. And how'd you end up getting that contact with ESPN that eventually led you to working with Stephen A?
The production company that was putting on the show was staffing up, and there was, a business partner that was a sort of a contact of one of the executive producers at the place that I was working at. So it was really sort of, they were friends, and they sort of got me a sit down, to grab some coffee, and I talked with the executive producer, and they asked me some things about, what I was interested in. And that sort of got me my first gig, which I think my title was like a postgraduate intern. So it wasn't necessarily like a huge gig, but it was a step in the door. And I had some great help and guidance while I was an intern. And they sort of said, "Hey, listen, don't worry about your title. Just get in the door. If they let you hold the mop, like that's fine. You know what I mean? Just be around what you want to do. Learn about it." And be the first one in the door in the morning and the last one to leave, and I tried to really take that advice to heart.
Very good. And so you were equipped with some good experience, some good production and skills. Where did that lead you to next?
So quite frankly, got canceled, and then ESPN was beginning to pull all of their studio shows out of New York. So the executive producer was also the executive producer of Cold Pizza at the time, which was filming in the city. So I was there for about 6 months till they pulled out and became First Take. And I just, even though it was sort of all I knew and the only connections I had, I wasn't quite ready to move up to Bristol, Connecticut. And I felt like I had enough experience that I could really make a go of it in New York City. So I went to the Yes Network for a little bit, and then I was lucky enough to to get in the door at NBC Sports. And, you know, that was around 2008, and I've been there ever since, and it's been an amazing experience.
So when you were first brought into NBC Sports, were you looking to continue sort of on the path of video production more so? And how did it go more from, I guess, production and in that realm to more PR marketing where you are now?
Yeah, the when I got in, I was producing on air and in promotions and advertising. So it was sort of a great straddling of what I knew about television production and you know, studio shows and live events and things that I had worked at ESPN and Yes. But the promos sort of, you have to get in the mindset of the marketing side a little bit more. Why are people interested in these events? You know, what part of these events, you know, appeal to the general audience, and how can we, you know, make certain events bigger? You know, if Tiger's there, like, how do we key into that and make sure everyone knows what's important and not to miss it? So that really sort of opened more of my mind of like the marketing side of this thing. And I think I really gravitated towards that. And I loved hearing about, you know, the mindset of what part of the business we were really trying to develop and the mindset that goes into those type of things. So it was almost like I knew the nuts and bolts of the production stuff. I was by no means an expert, but I really enjoyed the creativity that came with the promos and writing scripts and editing and producing, and that stuff I knew well. But the mindset of the marketing side was really what I would say was amazing about that experience, and that really groomed me to, you know, continue to develop that skill. And then as, you know, social media sort of became a bigger animal, it was something that I always very much enjoyed, and I loved learning. And as I learned more about marketing, I felt like there was opportunity as, you know, that we as NBC Sports and Olympics weren't, you know, gravitating towards fast enough. So I really became an advocate to do more. And, you know, for a number of years there, I was working in promos and producing on air promos and also running some of our early social media accounts. So it was a lot to take on. But again, it was opportunity, and I felt like it was something we really needed to be a part of.
So it sounds like, first off, it's really cool that it sounds like even from day one there, you were sort of at the beginning stages of what now we know as sort of content marketing, where it's content fans enjoy, but it's also promotional and you know, marketing element as well. So that's pretty cool, and it definitely serves how you maybe evolved with social there. But I mean, what was sort of the first steps to social to NBC Sports embracing social media? What were kind of the objectives that you established early on? We see fans are out there. We should be engaging with them a little bit, or is another channel to distribute our promos? And what was sort of the first step, and how did it evolve early on?
Well, I think the identifying that this is something we needed to be in was something that I was not the only one doing. I certainly was the only one doing it in my department to my boss, but you know, there was two other people that at the time were sort of doing the same thing, and we, you know, it's not a huge company, especially, you know, around 2008. So you knew a lot of people in a lot of different departments, and some of my friends in the office that, you know, shared a similar mindset were doing the same things to their bosses. And Lindsay Signor, who at the time we worked closely, but she was on the PR side, she was sort of telling her boss that. And then Aaron Bollendorf, who again was a very good friend of mine from work, sort of was telling her boss that. And her boss at the time was Fred Gadelli, who was the producer for Sunday Night Football. And he's very, very good at what he does, and he's always looking to innovate and really look for what's next. And he gave us the opportunity. He sort of said, you know, Aaron sort of said to him, hey, listen, you know, when I go to look up Sunday Night Football on Facebook, it's a Wikipedia page, and there's no official anything. And this is a space that nobody's in right now to the level that I think we should be in. And he bought it, and he said, you know what, I think you guys are right, and I think you guys should sort of run with this. So quickly, we finally got our shot and our sort of blessing to start the pages up and get things rolling. And then, you know, Sunday Night Football went great, and we finished that, and it was like, let's do this for NHL. And again, quickly, everything snowballed, and we got a lot of momentum. So that was sort of where we got our start.
So was it very open-ended early on, and it was just sort of, okay, let's let's focus. I know early on for a lot of people in social media, it was let's focus on the vanity metrics. Let's get as many likes and followers as we can. Let's get as many likes and likes per post that as we can, retweets, etc. Or was it more advanced even from day one? You guys actually focused on how content and engagement and the overall objectives and goals of the network were sort of all intertwined.
I mean, I would say very early on, it wasn't always necessarily the same mindset we have today. I think the space has evolved. I think, you know, how we, you know, there's so much that evolves on day to day that, you know, to think in 2010 or 2011 that we sort of had the exact same mindset, you know, I'd be fooling you. But I do think that.
And Dan, I don't mean to even go that direction. I think that even season pros today would say when I first started on social media, yeah, I was watching that how many fans our Facebook page had and how many followers our Twitter page had. So, I mean, it's certainly no surprise at all that that's where you guys may have started early on, especially to get buy-in from all the bosses up top.
Yeah, it was a mixture of we were very, I think at that point what was cool was, you know, we were, you know, we grew up in the age of we were, you know, college kids who had Facebook and were sort of, we were only consuming it. You know what I mean? That's all we were used to, the user experience. We didn't have the mindset, you know, it was second nature how to use these platforms and who was really good at it. But, you know, the brands establishing themselves was still very new at that time. So I think it was cool because we were completely looking at it as a user and as a consumer. And it was sort of like, hey, listen, like, this is the kind of stuff that interests me. Like, let's do that. And I think that was kind of really cool we really were able to shape that. And I think, you know, it was very early on, you know, the analytics and things like that. It was more like, you know, hey, everyone's this got a bunch of engagement. Let's do more of that. You know, it was very sort of simple and very pure. But like I said, it was kind of cool because we were just sort of trying to do what we always kind of wanted to see, like, oh, if, you know, it was sort of like, you know, having a really awesome, you know, sandbox to play in. Like, we could really try and pitch anything that we could think of. And if we could explain why we think it would do well, you know, they'd hear it. And it doesn't mean that everything that we pitched went through. There was certainly plenty of stuff that got shot down, but it was a great and continues to be a great experience where, you know, we're able to really play in an arena that, you know, that is really cool to be in and very creative. So it was always fun to make something out of nothing sort of from day one.
When you're talking about pitching ideas and content, to whom were those pitches going? I mean, where did social media kind of really fall in the greater bureaucracy for NBC Sports at the time? Was it PR? Was it marketing? Was it already its sort of own animal?
Yeah, I think, you know, what was really fantastic about the early days was that nobody tried to really pigeonhole us. Like I said, like, I think, you know, we were sort of juggling multiple jobs. Like, you know what I mean? Social media wasn't a full-time job. There was no social media department. There wasn't a position at that point. So I think it was great that we were sort of gray area because no one tried to say, oh, you guys are digital or, oh, you know. I was at the time in promotions, Lindsay at the time was at PR, and Aaron at the time was in production. So to us, it was kind of like, those were our backgrounds. So we sort of hovered between multiple departments. So that was where it started. And obviously as it grew, we had to sort of get smarter and become more of a division and really be worked into the org chart and everything. So today we sit in the marketing side of things, but what I think has been fantastic and continues to be fantastic about social media, NBC Sports, is we really touch so many different parts of the department. You know, we work with talent about, you know, them supporting what were our efforts and vice versa, and really making sure that they're showcasing and understand the platforms and how to, you know, how they can best use them. We work with, you know, PR to really understand, you know, the messaging of everything that's going out. We work with production to not only work with the on-air broadcast side, but also get behind the scenes content and really be involved in all of those type of things. So, and obviously digital and driving traffic and showcasing NBCSports.com, as well as our mobile platforms like Live Extra. I mean, there's so many different parts of our company that, that social media hits. It's really been fantastic because we get to work with so many different parts of the company and we really get to talk and figure out how we can best support them.
Very interesting. Was there a point you definitely started talking about as that you started to see the importance of of the social platforms and of the outlets you guys were basically in control of, and how it did reflect on the organization. So was there really a point where not just you guys, but maybe your superiors and colleagues as well realized, hey, when we post something on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, this is representing NBC, NBC Sports, and we're speaking on behalf of the organization, and it's tantamount into a press release, and it really needs to be consistent with the brand of NBC and NBC Sports. And was there a identifiable point when that kind of took place, and you guys started really taking that into account, or was it really just a sense of responsibility from day one that this has to look, sound, and feel like what NBC is as a brand?
It was absolutely from day one, and I'm proud that our executives really understood that part of it right away. They really understood what we were taught when we pitched them on what we wanted to do. They understood that part of it very clearly, and I think right away we learned, the sense of anxiety that I feel like everyone who works in social media and understands that you're always one tweet away from, greatness and getting a promotion, and you're also one tweet away from, having the worst day of your life and, getting emails from everybody in the company who saw something that shouldn't have gone out or, and getting fired. It's such a fine line of anxiety that I think we just live with. But to be honest with you, I think that's what's great about it. And I think that's what's fun, and you really have to respect it like you would anything that's sort of important, and really think and think through what you're putting out and the importance of it. But at the same time, I think that sort of voice and the fact that not only is everyone in our company potentially going to see something, but everyone outside our company potentially could see something. So that responsibility and everything really was something we grabbed from day one. And like I said, Lindsay's PR background really gave us that sort of that validity of, hey, we get that as a division. This is her background, and they sort of understood, and we had all worked with the company and understood really what the NBC Sports brand was, because we had been internally working there for about 3 or 4 years at that point. So we really got it, and I think it was nice that they respected that and they understood that we got it. But yes, certainly from day one we knew that. This wasn't something to sort of take lightly.
Very good, and I think you see a lot of different brand attitudes going on out there. Of course, you have a lot of brands going sort of the direction of snarkiness and sarcasm these days. What would you say is the NBC Sports brand on social media, and what you guys try to portray in your everyday correspondences with fans?
Yeah, well, I think first and foremost, it's accuracy is something that's very important to us. I think our voice and how we equate it is very much of being smart. I think there's a type, you're not going to see us being overly sarcastic. I think we enjoy having fun on these platforms. I think we see that as, very important to do, because to me, I don't think we're trying to be above it. I think we really want to embrace it for what it is. But at the same time, I don't think you're going to see it be so drastically different from, we want to have fun with it, but I don't think we would ever want to be something that we're not as a brand. So it's kind of an interesting fine line, but I think we want to be accurate, we want to be smart, and we want to be fun. And I think those are the three things that we really try and be on a day-to-day basis.
And I think that describes NBC's brand overall very well, and so you guys do a good job perpetuating that on social. I did want to shift briefly then to sort of the how the content works, and whether it's you guys almost starting a campaign, supporting a campaign, saying here's the content that we need and need to get produced, or is it more looking at the content NBC Sports already has for their on-air promos, for their actual programming, and saying, okay, how can we repurpose this for our own needs on social?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of a little bit of B. I think that's what's fantastic, is we have all that ammunition. We have the ability to have all these great assets. We have amazing writers and bloggers that work for NBCSports.com. We have amazing graphic artists that do some amazing work for so much of our production value. So we really try and use those to our advantage. But in certain cases, and in certain things that we do, we have to realize like what this medium is for. And while we need those other things to bolster it, I think we also have to and try to think through, you know, the original content that works well in digital and social, like the things that we did for Premier League, working with Jason Sudeikis and the, you know, the sort of Ted Lasso character that we created.
Which was awesome, by the way.
Well, I'm glad you did it. Yeah, and that was really just one of those things that, you know, I think the right away, it was realized that this is going to be bigger than just a few on-air spots. We need to make you know, an on-air short that's going to, or I mean, an off-air short that's going to be digital. And, you know, we need to get this on YouTube. And that was, there was a lot of strategy and meetings that we had to figure out the launch of that and how we could help springboard that. Because at that point, you know, Premier League, we knew what that property and how important that property was going to be for our company. And on the social media side, we were just starting a brand new page.
And so, also, looking at content that is, I guess, earmarked for a more digital and social atmosphere, is there a different process for creating it? Is there a different even standard of execution? I mean, obviously, you want always the highest amount of quality for every single video, but if the lighting isn't perfect for something that's only going to go on Facebook and YouTube, it's probably not as much of a concern as if it's going on, you know, NBC Network or NBC Sports Network. Does that come into play much, or is it really just we need everything to be up to X standards so it can work on YouTube just as well as it can work on the actual national network on TV?
I mean, I think it varies from idea to idea. There's certainly, you know, things that we've done that have all been recorded on cell phones. You know, there's things like that, you know, that we've done. And you know, it's not always that same formula. Like, you know, the Ted Lasso thing is such a great piece, and so was the follow-up. But, you know, that's very different than some of the other things we do. You know, for the Olympics, we were able to put together some, you know, some things that were very, you know, I wouldn't call, they weren't low-end by any means, but they were very different. You know, it was like we did a photo shoot where we had the athletes with puppies, you know what I mean, the Olympic class of 2014. And we also did like an Olympic class yearbook where it was like meant to feel like a photo booth. And it, you know what I mean, even though we, that idea, it's so much different from anything else. And, you know, we did a vine of like, you know, every Peyton Manning pass he had in his career before he broke the record on Sunday Night Football. Like, all these ideas are so apples to oranges sometimes that sometimes it's fine to have low light and have it be cell phone video. And sometimes, you know what, the idea to really make it work the right way, you need a full shoot and a star and all these things. So I think what's amazing about social media is you really are able to make any idea on any level work, because at the end of the day, you have to make something out of nothing.
Let's actually jump back to that Ted Lasso feature, which, like I said, was really funny, really good. And did a good job promote NBC Sports Network programming for BPL. What were sort of some of the KPIs you guys looked at afterwards and said this was a successful campaign? It did drive digital traffic. It did drive conversation or whatever the case may be. What were some of the ways that you talked amongst your coworkers and your bosses that this was a successful campaign that we should replicate?
Yeah, I think for us, really, what that was, the importance for that was to help launch our NBC Sports Soccer social platforms. That was where we looked at, like, from the social side, what was going to be really important for us, because, you know, we had only launched these pages maybe months or, you know, weeks before the Ted Lasso piece was launching and going off. So, you know, we knew that it was really important for the on-air promos to be tagged with "see the full film" at the NBC Sports Facebook page or the NBC Sports Soccer Facebook page. Wow. Like, you know what I mean? To us, we used that piece to, you know, launch and try to get that follower count up on our social media platforms. So that really was easy to see in terms of the growth, because right away we were able to see us skyrocket in those numbers. As it got passed around and, you know, as the posts were going around, the shares, everything that we saw on that piece, a lot of it was driving back to not only web traffic, which did well, but most importantly, we were seeing, you know, our numbers and follower accounts go through the roof and skyrocket at a number that, you know, normally you would have to, you'd have to get paid media behind, you know, you'd have to make a Facebook buy or a Twitter buy.
Very true.
You know, what we were able to do was really just invest in the content and let the content do the work for us.
You're seeing also some companies like your Nielsen Social trying to tie, you know, social buzz, whether it's live or beforehand or after TV event, trying to tie together, I guess, social engagement and tune in and viewership. Are you guys attempting to do that at this point, or is it more just let's focus on what we know rather than engaging in all these speculative activities?
I mean, at the end of the day, we are, you know, we're a media company, we're a television, and you know, the tangible businesses that drive a lot for us are, you know, our on air and our digital platforms. So to us, those are always things that we take into huge consideration, and I think those are the things that we really want to draw attention to. The way we see it is, you know, it shouldn't be siloed. You know, as much as it's important to do what you do on television well, as important it is to do what you do on the web well, it, you know, and what we do in social has to be done well. If we're only thinking in each medium as a silo, I don't think that we're doing our job. And I think what we've really tried to push is to think of social as the bridge between the two, between the broadcast and between the website or you know, the app or whatever, you know, we're trying to sort of do that 360 experience where, you know, one is taking you to the other, which is taking you to the other, to us is really immensely important.
Oh, very cool. I did want to jump back and then briefly to some degree and talk about how you guys really do try to tailor content or even where you're sending fans and how you're speaking to fans as well when it comes to promoting certain sports. I mean, you guys at MC Sports have NFL, you guys do obviously, you know, you're a British football now, soccer, you guys have done Formula One racing. And so there's really a lot of different audiences you're speaking to. How do you guys sort of change it up, or is it just trying to keep on, you know, keep on brand and keeping consistent and just, you know, the content might be a little different because you're at different places, but you're still speaking the same language and treating the platforms the same way and the audience the same way?
I think, you know, we're lucky, like I said, we have a host of amazing bloggers from NBCSports.com that are experts in each of these fields, and we really try to use that them all as a tool. So, you know, we know that if I'm an F1 fan, I know that sport inside and out, and I need to make sure that we're speaking to those F1 fans with the greatest degree of respect to make sure that they know that we know their passion and we respect the sport and we respect them just as much. So for us, I think we have to be NBC Sports and keep our brand in perspective when we're thinking about those things. But I think we really put our properties, you know, and the purity of those sports in you know, as the number one target of what's important. And I think, you know, our brand is something that comes secondary in that way. So really, I think each platform, we know we want to just give the fans as much of what, you know, what they're looking for as we can, whether it's as a viewer or in this case as a user for social media.
So are you guys mostly, you know, keeping all the traffic coming to the main NBC Sports social platforms and pages, or for certain sports and events where you know there is an insider or a separate page, like for NBC Sports Soccer, are you trying to sort of serve as a gatekeeper and send fans there where there maybe they're more comfortable using the nomenclature that teams are accustomed to and soccer fans are accustomed to in this example?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there, again, if we know that the NBC Sports Soccer pages, you know, both Facebook, Twitter, are important, and those fans want that content 24/7. And that's what we're thinking when we're, you know, when in terms of community management behind those pages. But then there's obviously the NBC Sports and the NBCSN pages where it is more general and it's more of what's going to be on or what's going on big that's within our sort of stable of properties. And, you know, that's where you're going to get your general fan who needs to know that the hockey game's going into overtime. Like the NHL on NBC Sports, you know, Facebook and Twitter pages are going to tell you that and everything in between. But you know, the NBCSN and NBC Sports pages really are just sort of looking around from all the properties and all of the world of sports to give you that. So, you know, it's a little bit of a mindset. Obviously, each handle, you know, even though we're, you know, we are actively thinking through, you know, what handle should play what role, we're not thinking that there's, you know, every user that watches an NBC Sports program follows us on every single of our pages. So we really try to make sure that the information that's pertinent to any sports fan gets to them.
Very good. Do you find that fans of certain sports gravitate to certain platforms, or do you see really consistent engagement across the board, whether it's a hockey fan or an F1 fan?
I would say there's different passions and different types. Like, not that a passion between, you know, an Olympics fan or a passion between, you know, a soccer fan and a hockey fan is any more or less, but certainly the way that they celebrate is different. And again, going back to just really trying to make that experience authentic to them, I think that's how we view it as most important. So I think, you know, when we, you know, we know hockey fans and we know like how they're sort of enjoying it, and we want to like, you know, tap into that. Often we try to take that user-generated content of the greatest things we're seeing, where, you know, people are, you know, cutting, you know, mowing the lawn in the backyard, you know, for their favorite team. You know, that might be more common in certain sports and not so much other. You know, we identified pretty much early, you know, that how much the early morning Premier League fans were getting up, you know, sometimes on the West Coast as early as like, you know, 3 a.m. to get ready for the matches. So it's, you know, each fan is celebrating in their own way. To us, it's just about making sure that we acknowledge and we're giving them what they need when they need it.
No, I love that, and that's a great perspective to take, is being there for the fans at, when they're on there. I did want to ask you briefly as well about NBC Sports sort of as its own entity, and are you guys trying to be sort of a one-stop shop for your everyday sports fan, or is it more NBC Sports is your central location that brings together all of the properties that NBC Sports owns? And so, like, will someone not go to NBC Sports as much for their day-to-day Major League Baseball, for example, but you guys, what they would be there first and foremost for their NHL?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think especially, like I said, we're lucky enough that outside the social team, we're able to tap into a lot of different realms of expertise and content, whether it's from our writers on the site or from the producers and people who are putting together amazing, you know, on-air pieces. For us, it's more along the lines of, you know, whatever we see the most engagement around, we're going to sort of tailor some of our content towards. And we certainly find that more people are coming to us for the properties that they know us to be sort of presenting. But that's not to say that we still don't have a lot of amazing content outside of those realms, and we certainly put them on display. And big, you know, the biggest news of the day you will most definitely find on NBCSports.com and on the NBC Sports Facebook, Twitter, Instagram pages. But at the, you know, I do think if you're looking for a percentage, you're going to find a higher percentage of content that's based around the properties that we present, more so than the ones that we don't. But you know, that's sort of hit or miss. It just happens to be that we try to rally around the things that we're broadcasting a little more. But again, you know, we certainly tap into the writers of NBCSports.com, which provide us amazing material around all the properties, you know, in all of sports.
No, and it certainly makes sense too. And you guys can plan well in advance when you know you guys have an Olympic broadcast coming up, or an NHL rivalry game coming up, versus other sports. You know, you must be, I guess, a little bit more reactionary and on the cuff. I guess speaking in that direction, then before we get to this episode's shareable stat, having a great conversation with Dan Paula, manager of social and digital marketing with NBC Sports Olympics. I wanted to ask about how far in advance you guys do plan content, working with content calendars, versus how much is more on the fly, reactionary, based on what's happening in the news or a given game, and how that sort of works hand in hand and works together.
Yeah, no, you know, the great part about social media is so much of it is spontaneous, but I think, we don't do anything without trying to plan and be prepared, certainly. We have two amazing community managers in Ryan Irwin and Matt Zients, and every single morning we sit down as a group, and first thing very early in the morning we go through what we think is important that day and what we think would be fun to try and what opportunities we want to try and test out. And that's just on a day-to-day news cycle. And then in those meetings or other meetings, we'll discuss and go through, the properties and big games that we have coming up. And we really look at like an editorial plan. We go back and we go through, whether it's old plays or, throwback Thursday, like way old school photos. We're as prepared as we can be going in. But what I love about social media and I love about our group is everyone sort of knows that at the end of the day, once, the ball kicks off and the game's underway, you could be as prepared as you want and you need to be, but you may not always end up using all of that stuff. And I think that was sort of a rule of television that I took into social media is, we put in the work to be prepared, but nothing makes us happier than the game so exciting that we don't use some of the stuff that we thought would be relevant and prepared because, things happen in sports that, you can never expect, and it's part of the great part of it, and it's part of the excitement around it, and it's why makes it makes Sunday Night Football and all the different amazing properties we have must-see television is because you never totally know what you're going to get. So I think often we'll come in prepared, but at the end of the day, we'll throw it all out the window and have a better idea that came up, based off spontaneity and just reacting to what's happening on the field.
Definitely. And I think anyone's worked in any side of sports, whether it's production, graphics, social, knows that there's plenty of content that ends up on the cutting room floor because of unforeseen circumstances. But that's what makes sports a lot of fun. I guess staying on that subject here in our last couple minutes with Dan Paul of NBC Sports and Olympics, what is sort of your own personal or brand philosophy when it comes to in-game posting, in-game tweeting, and posting to other platforms? Does it vary by sport? Are you trying to make sure fans are informed, or is it more a second screen companion? I mean, especially when you guys have some, British football games going on at all hours of the morning and day.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think it varies a little bit from property to property and from event to event. You know what I mean? I think we want to give you enough so that if you're, in church and you're checking your phone just to see a score for your favorite match, we want to give you that information. But I don't think we ever try to be, a play-by-play necessarily. We'll probably give you score updates. A big understanding. That's about as close as we get to just informational, and the play-by-play stuff. Obviously, we're going to also give you links to all the live extra streams, so that this way, if you are caught at your kid's birthday or shopping with the girlfriend or the wife or any reason that you can't be watching on your television, we're going to let you know you can be watching and giving you those links. And we think that that's really important. But we also look at it as a second screen companion, like you were saying. I think, for us, we want to give you a little bit of that chatter, and we want to tap into the chatter of, what people are talking about, because often in social, it's very much the funny little thing, like the cutaway to the crowd, and someone was wearing ridiculous face paint or making a ridiculous face or something funny. And there's an entertainment factor, and like I said, it's being fun on these platforms is really something that's paramount to us. So we really try to engage and grasp that second screen experience just as much. But I wouldn't say it's only second screen or it's only play-by-play and information. To us, we really want to give you a little bit of it all.
Oh, it makes sense, and especially with the variety of properties you guys own, some sports are more conducive to a play-by-play than others, and others more have more downtime and all that as well. One last thing I want to ask you about, Dan, is where you guys are at on the reporting side and analytics side, and how much you have your hands in that versus other departments, and where that stands next to looking at web traffic and viewership traffic, mobile traffic as well.
Yeah, I mean it's funny. It's the as all of these platforms are evolving, the analytics are evolving as well, and it's fantastic to see and to be able to tap into. It's it we have a a different world that we work in than a lot of others. And, you know, the fact that the ground is shifting under you, Facebook makes a change and your whole business can make a change. And sometimes it can be for the better, or sometimes the worse. So analytics is certainly something that's very important to us. It's something that we don't necessarily handle all of the research angle of it ourselves. Aside from our research internal department, we have some help outside, but you know, we know the importance of monitoring the engagement and monitoring all the traffic that we're driving and all those things. So whether it's, you know, the reports that we get from .com, whether it's reports based on our audience as a whole, as a network, versus our audience on the social platforms, versus engagement numbers, all these type of things really are a big part of what we're doing. And what we have to look at what we're doing, because it helps shape our strategy. So it's definitely a big part of our business, and it's definitely something that we look at day to day, week to week, and you know, month to month as well. It's hard to just look at one without looking at the big picture, and the scope of it really sort of is important. So yeah, analytics is something that we look very, very closely at, and we're lucky enough again to have some great help internally where we tap into a lot of those numbers.
Very good. No, I mean, as you said, there's a lot of evolving parts to analytics. That there's a sea of data out there, and you can get lost in that stuff, for better or for worse. It's yeah. At the end of the day, it's about finding those actionable things you can learn from it, and answering questions that the data can help you answer.
Yeah, for a while there, the data part and the analytics it was very much wild, wild west, and I feel like it's really becoming much more uniform and much more of an industry standard, which is nice to see.
Well, we will transition away from the geeky number stuff and have a little fun coming up in our Discourse with Dan segment. But first, we'll have this episode's shareable stat coming at you right now. So really a fun, compelling, fascinating discussion with Dan Pala, manager of social media marketing with MSC Sports Olympics. Really enjoyed learning about his career path, how the content machine and cycle works across the NBC Sports Group, and really everything they're doing there to promote not just the sports and properties they own, but serving their fan base in general, which is really following sports at every time of day. And we'll have a little more fun with Dan along those lines, among other things, in our Discourse with Dan segment coming right up shortly with some fun questions with Dan Pala. But before that, this episode's shareable stat. This episode's shareable stat comes from ComScore in a recent report from this past year, and it showed that of a user's mobile apps, 42% of their time is spent on their user's single most used mobile app. So whether that's Facebook or Twitter or ESPN SportsCenter, there's 42% of mobile app users' time is spent on their single most used app. So what does that mean for sports marketers? It means that while fans may be downloading your app for one-time use or to check things out for something new, whether it's a partner app or the latest and greatest thing in the App Store, at the end of the day, they are going back to the apps that they use the most, the old faithful, so to speak, whether that is a social media app or whatnot. So how do you make sure that of someone's few apps that yours is one that they visit a lot? Keep in mind, you need some dynamic content. You need to make sure that every time they open their app, that they have a chance to be surprised and delighted by what they see. So make sure the content is fresh and that every day someone is anticipating what will be on there next. Also, pay attention to your analytics and your data across the board with digital platforms, starting with your mobile app, of course, but looking at your web and your social media. What content is keeping users coming back and keeping users engaged on those platforms, and try to repurpose or to at least imitate that content on the mobile app side. Finally, and this has been around for a while, and that is keeping mobile content exclusive to some degree. Is there something on your mobile app that a fan cannot get elsewhere, whether it is a separate sports app or a social media app? What's the reason for them to sign into your app? Is it replacing something? Is it a substitute for something? Or really, is it a unique enhancement that only you can offer through that app? There's a lot of things you can do with this shareable stat from today's episode of Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast, but it's certainly one worth thinking about, in that of a user's apps, 42% of their time spent on mobile apps is spent on the single most used app. So the app ecosystem is quite crowded on one's phone, but they're only accessing a handful of apps on a daily basis, and you gotta work hard to make sure that your app is one of them. All right, that's this episode's shareable stat. Think about it, ponder it, take action on it, most importantly, and have a discussion with it. Alrighty, hope you enjoy this episode's shareable stat. We'll be coming right back at you with our Discourse with Dan segment, having a little fun with our guest today, Dan Pala, Manager of Social Media Marketing for NBC Sports and Olympics. All right, welcome back. We are delighted to have Dan Pala on the podcast today. He is the Manager of Social Marketing with NBC Sports and Olympics. Really fun job, really knows what he's doing. And maybe he has a little bit to say about this episode's shareable stat, which was all about mobile apps and how 42% of all app time on smartphones occurs with an individual's single most used app. Now, I'm thinking Dan probably hopes that that single most used app is NBC Sports Live Extra, but does that number surprise you at all, Dan, that there's a lot of app usage, but it's not that many different number of apps?
No, I would agree with that. I mean, I think, you know, there's definitely plenty that I download, but I definitely have my stable, and you're 100% right. I'm hoping to God that people's number one most used ones are the NBC Sports Live Extra and NBC Sports Talk apps for sure.
Well, I can tell you that the NBC Sports Live Extra in particular has been a lifesaver at times. So definitely recommend that to anyone who is looking to watch some live sports, no matter where they are. But you survived your interview, Dan. Now it's time to have a little fun. Are you ready for our Discourse with Dan?
Let's do it.
All right, number one for you. The sport that NBC carries that has the most active fans on social media?
It would be tough to differentiate. I'd say within an Olympic Games, I would say the Olympic fan. And then I would say to have seen the growth and the passion that is behind the NBC Sports Soccer brand and how much the soccer audience is just growing and really trying to take in as much as we can put out has really been impressive. So I would say those two have really sort of gone beyond expectation of what we've seen in terms of numbers and passion.
Very cool, and I can't even imagine the international reach and having fans from all over the world really chiming in and in various languages probably with different kinds of slang and social media terms. It's probably really fun seeing that.
Absolutely, it's an amazing experience.
All right, number two for you, Dan. What sports moment that played out on NBC Sports in 2014 generated the biggest or the most real-time social media buzz?
I would say for us on the NBC Sports side, it would have to have been the Sochi Olympics for sure. I mean, it was amazing to see, you know, moments like the TJ Oshie shootout goal. You know, those are the type of things that transcend sports that make everyone from your mom to your little brother all talk about the same thing and be excited about it. So those are the type of things to me that really make an Olympics like that so successful and so much fun. And then, you know, also the amount of activity we saw off the World Cup and the amount of growth we saw on the NBC Sports Soccer side of that, even though it wasn't broadcast on NBC Sports, it really, our involvement and engagement around that were, you know, way above what we could have ever thought.
Very good. And especially for the Olympics where you have a demographic that might skew a little bit older when it comes to TV viewership. Did you find that the buzz from the Olympics on social even goosed some participation in numbers of fans that maybe hadn't been on socials much previously?
Oh, absolutely. You know what I mean? I think you're seeing, you know, when I'm seeing my mom post something on Facebook about the Olympics, I think that really shows for me from my own small sample size of one, just how much it reaches. And it's amazing. I mean, it's part of what makes the Olympics so special is, you know, the demographics get so wide and everyone gets so involved. It's fun to be able to watch, you know, as a family. And I think that's what, you know, what's great about the Olympics is full families sitting there watching and rooting on their country.
Oh, that's awesome and great to hear. All right, number three for you, Dan. We talked about this briefly in our interview. The best type of content to share on social media to supplement a live sports TV viewing experience is what?
Yeah, I think for us, one of the things we've teed into and I think what we've done a great job of, and it feels weird saying that we've done a great job of that, but I think for us is really, tapping into the fact that like there's so many elements of our broadcast that are so special and, you know, have so much work put into them, and then often either don't make air or are on the screen for about 4 seconds, you know, whilst not everyone was paying attention. And I think what we've been able to do is really acknowledge the hard work and also see that these things should have a second life in the social sphere. So, for example, for Sunday Night Football especially, the graphics team puts so much work into so many different stats and graphics and amazing things. And again, these things tell a story and they do an amazing job of telling that story. And what we try to do is really use all of those pieces and we bring them into the social experience and we'll mirror the broadcast and we'll make sure that these things are putting out. So again, when you talk about that second screen, you're seeing the stats and you're getting to really, you know, engage with them probably at a length that you don't, because they might have only been on the screen for 2 or 3 seconds and sometimes not at all.
Oh, I love that. I think anyone that runs a media or sports related social media account should just play that back a couple times, because there's so much good knowledge in there, whether it's, you know, repurposing graphics or finding out what in the broadcast is going to work well on social and having those work together with synergy, and just a lot of great insight there. So enjoy that answer. Good job. All right, number four for you, Dan. The best pro sports team on social media and why? Or it can be a, you know, group of teams. I know this can be tough to pick just one in your position.
Yeah, certainly we have a bunch of partners and teams we work with. So I'm sure there's no right answer I can say here. But if putting politics aside and all of that, I would say I've always been impressed with the LA Kings social accounts. I think, you know, a couple years ago in the playoffs, some of the stuff they put out around the Vancouver Canucks series and the playoffs and things like that, to me, it you know, the grass is always greener, because what I think what you want to see from a team is really to take a stand, to really have some fun. And what they're able to do is really say, you know, yeah, we want our team to win and we want your team to lose. And a little bit of trash talk is a good thing, I think, sometimes, and especially from their own voice. And I think that's something that Kings fans have rallied around. And, you know, I had a chance to meet some of those guys and really talk with them. And they're really smart. They know what they're doing. They know their voice. And it's not necessarily what you'd expect from, you know, a team's handle. I think they get a little edgy and they have some fun. And I think that's what I enjoy about it. And I think that's why they've sort of garnered a lot of great acknowledgement, is they have, you know, they really know their voice and they're willing to be different. And I think they've seen the benefits of it.
Oh, very interesting. And they definitely have their unique style of snarkiness out there. And I think you hit on the key there, is that they definitely do own and know their voice. And there's buy-in from all throughout the organization, so that there's support for them to be this sort of cocky presence on Twitter. So I like that answer, even though I am not the biggest Kings fan, having worked for the Ducks in the past. All right, number five for you, Dan. I'm not sure whether MC Sports has plans for this in the future or not, but tell our listeners your thoughts in 60 seconds or less on Snapchat and other messaging apps and its place in social media for sports.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited, you know, anytime that there's a new platform that comes into the social media sphere, and I'm excited to see Snapchat and people beginning to embrace it. You know, I noticed specifically what MLB's been doing with it. You know, I think for us, we're waiting to make sure that how we tackle it and the way we tackle it is going to be sort of unique. But I think that's what I enjoy about a new platform, is it's a new perspective, it's a new way to tell stories and give different scenes of sports. So I think for me, that's what I think is great about Snapchat, is that it's a new platform that's giving you a new perspective and a new way to reach, you know, sports fans.
So when you're evaluating whether MC Sports should adopt a new platform like Snapchat, what sort of makes you guys go, okay, now's the time, when it's a critical mass of people on a platform, when fans are starting to call for it? Or is there any sort of rhyme or reason to that?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a strategy and a thinking behind it. I don't know if, you know, popularity is 100% needs to be the number one reason. I think what we want to do is, if we're going to be on a platform, we really want to take into account what we're going to do on that platform and how do we make it work for us. I don't think we really want to be in a place just to be there. I think we want to do something interesting and innovative there. So we've certainly had a lot of discussions, and I think we're beginning to really shape a plan. You know, how long before we're there or not, I'm not sure that I have the answer for you right now. But I think, you know, for me personally, what I love about, you know, a platform like that is the way you use it is completely different than any other platform. What you see people using it is completely different. And even the small amount of brands that, you know, you're beginning to see on Snapchat, I think you're really seeing that people have to approach it in a different way. And I think that new approach is what excites me because it forces you to create something new. And I think that's when, you know, the user experience is great, is when someone approaches something from a completely different perspective and a new innovative way.
Oh, fantastic. Is this platform going to allow us to do something we haven't done before? That's
exactly. Great. Yeah.
All right, number six for you, Dan. And this is the one I think a lot of social media people grapple with a little bit. The most underrated way that social media for MC Sports adds value for the network and its organizations.
I think for us, it's you know, I would key into influencers. You know what I mean? What's been very valuable for us on the social media front is that our day-to-day work is being acknowledged as important from people who are very influential in the space, whether it's, you know, big name bloggers, small name bloggers, or just, you know, talent from our own platforms or from, you know, writers and people of that, you know, of that nature. Because what I think what we enjoy seeing is when we do something well, it's not only acknowledged by people of influence who have large social standings and large influence on blogs and, you know, print media and other things, but it's being shared and it helps us get things out that much faster, whether it's digital content, whether it's just a press release and news that's breaking about, you know, something that's going on in our business, or even content like the... you know, like the Ted Lasso piece or something like that, when someone of influence is sharing or acknowledging what we're doing, it goes that much further. And I think those influencers that we've, you know, taken so much time to build up by giving them valuable content is really what makes social spread so quickly, is because when you have a ton of great influencers who are following your platforms, what you want to get across, it can get across 10 times faster. So like I said, when that hockey game's going into a shootout and we're sort of really, you know, trying to push that and the live stream, those influencers are the value that social brings to us by getting the word out.
Oh, that's great. And I think definitely an underappreciated way to utilize social, especially in the sports field, is to find those influencers, whether they're helping to drive tune in or ticket sales or partnership activation. There's a lot of opportunity there. I'm glad you got to identify that. All right, number seven for you. This should be a fun one. So EPL games are at all hours of the day. You talked about some West Coasters up at 3, 4 a.m. to take in their favorite football clubs. So tell me the best thing to snack on while you're watching EPL soccer at 6, 7 a.m. in the morning.
The best thing to snack on? I would say a beer. I think the best part of Premier League, at least for me as a fan, and how I fell in love with the Premier League itself, was going to bars at 7 a.m. and seeing them absolutely packed here in New York City. And really, through social media, I've been able to see this experience all throughout the country. And to see that atmosphere that makes, you know, Premier League soccer so amazing, which is, you know, the passion and the chanting and, you know, people having a beer or two or a couple, maybe too many, but that sort of amazing, it's every game's a playoff game in that type of atmosphere. And that's how a sports fan, I feel like, wants to celebrate a sport. So for me, that's how I fell in love with it. And I think I really would encourage people to go and find these groups and find your local supporter group and celebrate with them, because that's the easiest way to fall in with the club and really fall in love with the sport.
Oh, just awesome. Having a nice beer at 7 a.m. with breakfast.
Yeah, exactly.
And just really, again, speaking about NBC Sports, how they've really come to really capitalize and own those hours, those early morning hours before the you know, the NFL or the college football games have really started up for the days, that the NBC Sports has really done a good job of capturing fans then that want to watch their live sports before, you know, while they drink their early morning beer or coffee.
Yeah, it's been great.
Number eight for you, Dan. We talked about this a little bit in the interview. In three words or less, what is the personality of NBC Sports on social media?
I think, like I said, accuracy is probably number one for us. Being smart and making sure the things that we're saying are not only true, but are coming across and making you think in a different way. And I think, the third is fun. And I think, that's really important on these mediums. We don't want to always be exactly what you would expect from NBC Sports. I think we really want to tap into and think through what's sort of reactive, what's witty, what's interesting, what original type of content will do really well on social, and it has to be fun, because that's what these mediums are also meant for.
I love it, and I love the thoughtfulness behind it. So accurate, fun, and on point. I love it. All right, last one for you. I'll get you out a little bonus question. This is a fun one to ask people that work in social media and sports. Let's say it's coming down to the wire. There's a title game or a championship game on NBC Sports, and you are at the helm of the Twitter feed. As it goes down to the waning seconds of the game, and someone's about to clinch a championship, do you have a post ready to go, or are you winging it in the last seconds?
It definitely totally depends, but I think we were talking about it a little bit earlier. I mean, what we do is we try to come in as prepared as humanly possible. But if the game's on the line, I mean, we can never guess that TJ Oshie is going to win it, in a shootout, and make this amazing, moment in the Olympics. So much of it has to be reactive too. I'm sure we probably would have a USA wins image, but if we don't throw that out and come up with like a great image of what just happened with a screen grab and a great caption and a photo of, of what it's like from the ice and what the celebrations are around the stadium, if we're not taking advantage of that, we're not doing our job right. So we're definitely coming in prepared, but nothing makes us happier than throwing it all out and coming up with something great on the spot, because that timeliness and that moment is probably going to be so much better than anything we could have planned before.
Oh, very good, and it's gotta be nothing more fun than being the one to push tweet or push post to announce something exciting happening, and knowing fans are about to blow up on social.
Oh,
That's always fun.
absolutely. It really is. It's really fun to be a part of.
All right, Dan, you survived your Discourse with Dan segment. Great fun, lots of good answers there. Now it's your chance to take over the podcast a little bit and give us your social media all-star to follow. Someone on Twitter or a blog. Wherever they may be, tell us who they are and why they're worth following.
Yeah, no problem. I think, for me, our team is just so good, and we put together, so many hours and work really hard. So, I have to be a homer and give it the shout out to the NBC Sports social media team. So, make sure to follow Lindsay Signor on Twitter, Ryan Irwin, and Matt Zients. These guys, we all work really, really hard as a team, and we all put the team above all else. So it's only fitting that those are the guys that everyone look to follow.
Very good, and I'm sure hopefully they'll listen and get you some nice Christmas presents for
I
that.
will say.
And lastly, Dano, where can we find yourself on social media as well as NBC Sports and Olympics all across social and digital?
Yeah, so again, I think, there's the NBC at NBC Olympics, at NBCSN, at NBC Sports, Facebook, Twitter. We're on Instagram as well, at NHL on NBC Sports, at NBC Sports Soccer. I mean, there's a ton of them to follow. So, make sure to check them out, because I think each one's a unique perspective, and we put a ton of thought and work into it. So we love hearing feedback, and we love, if you're interested in social media and those type of things, we really try to do our best, and I can't say enough of the team we work with and how much effort we put in. So, please support us.
Very good, and I can also say the NBC Sports PR Twitter handle is actually pretty cool for those that are really interested in getting TV ratings numbers the morning after and whatnot. So definitely a good place to find Dan and all across social media, and NBC Sports is all over the place with their various outlets. But thank you guys so much, Dan, for giving us some of your time. We know that the sports season is never ending and always busy, and you guys are as busy as ever right now preparing for the end of the year and a lot of sports to come up on NBC Sports. So thank you so much for giving us some of your time tonight on the podcast, Dan.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, we're working hard. Super Bowl's coming up, but I appreciate, you having me on, and I appreciate you taking some time, and hopefully people get something get out of this.
We appreciate a little bit of insight in MC Sports, and we'll be watching, whether it's at 7 a.m. or late night Sunday night football. We'll definitely know you're all over it.
Thanks, Neil.
Thank you so much again to Dan Pala for taking some time out of his very busy schedule to speak with us today on the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Really learned a lot from him about how the NBC Sports social media content machine works, how they manage all their properties and all their fan bases across the globe, and also how refreshing a pint of beer can be at 7 in the morning on a weekend while you take in some English Premier League football on NBC Sports Network or elsewhere. But that'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thank you so much again for listening. Please check out more content at the website dsmsports.net and follow me, your host, Neil Horwitz, on Twitter at NJH287. Always happy to connect with anyone that wants to talk some social media and digital media and sports. And we'll see you back next time for another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.